When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to Flashback, a fan podcast covering the Flash television show on the CW. I am Steven Schleicher. Joining me, as always, is Matthew Peterson. And this week, we're talking The Sound and the Fury, Season 1, Episode 11, featuring the introduction of the Pied Piper.
Yes.
So, interesting story with Pied Piper. He was a... it's funny that this show's called Flashback because a lot of this episode is told in Flashback.
Yeah, he was he was a protege of the maybe Reverse Flash.
No, definitely a man in the yellow suit reverse flash. Yes. Yes.
Professor Harrison Ed, I believe.
Hartley Rathaway was the protege. And then something terrible happened. Maybe it was because Rathaway tried to warn Wells that the particle accelerator could blow up, and Wells didn't want to listen to it, so he fired him.
Yep.
But the accident caused a problem with Mr. Rathaway.
Yes.
And he's got terrible ringing in his ears.
He's got tinnitus.
Tinnitus.
Got the tinnitus. But, fortunately, he's also a genius-level mind who's created devices that keep him from, you know, being in constant pain, and also allow him to channel sound.
Yep, and to hear all sorts of different sounds as well. So he's got some sonic gloves.
Sonic gloves, and I think he's got some sort of implants because he said he could hear Barry's radio transmissions.
Right, right. Yeah, and he uses those to help break out of the containment cell originally.
Oh my God, that was brutal.
Oh, when he pulls it out of his ear.
Bad.
The thing I just couldn't get over in this issue is how much the actor playing the Pied Piper looks like Harry Potter.
See, this is the episode where I realized that Professor Harrison Ed from the future looks an awful lot like Barry Allen.
Yeah, a lot of people have,
close-up shots of just the head. But yeah, he reminded me of the lead singer of from Pitch Perfect. The lead singer of the Troublemakers, which I thought was kind of cool.
So Zoom or Professor Zoom? Harrison Wells is really kind of the center focus part of this story this week. And maybe even more so is the end of the episode where he is using the stolen tachyon device from Mercury Labs.
Yep.
And he is trying to channel the speed force into his body to allow him to move.
He originally does use flash powers at least twice in this episode.
Oh, yeah. And we see the red streak and everything. So last week...
A red streak, not a yellow one.
Yes, because it's the reverse flash. Last week we were talking about maybe, maybe he was Hunter Zolomon, Zoom.
Right.
Because he was trying to make Barry the best flash that he could be. However, it's Professor Zoom, Eobard Thawne, who uses technology to use the speed force to mimic Barry's powers.
Right. Well,
my guess is... Go ahead with what you were going to say.
Go ahead with what you're going to
say. Well, I was going to say my guess is either they're trying to really throw everybody for a loop or, and this is probably what is more than likely happening, Harrison Wells is Zoom, Hunter Zolomon, because Geoff Johns is one of the executive producers on this series. Everything in this series or I wouldn't say everything. A lot of what we see with Barry Allen is based on the Geoff Johns run of The Flash, where Barry's mom is killed and Barry is traumatized by that. And the bad guy in that is Zoom. Zoom is Geoff Johns' trademark from September 2000. So that's who my final guess is going to be. He is Hunter Zolomon. Mm-hmm. And Eddie Thawne will be a Reverse Flash at some point through some kind of accident.
It's interesting. I'm wondering if we're not getting a composite.
I thought that at first, but
Reverse Flash and Zoom. But at one point in the DC Universe, not so long ago, they had both of them active at the same time, and they never explained it.
Yeah.
They had Reverse Flash Yobard Thawne running about in one book, and then Zoom running about in another.
Oh, and literally. Don't forget Death Flash, the Black Flash.
The Black Flash.
So
He's from Earth 23, I believe.
I mentioned that Wells was channeling the Speed Force. Matthew, what is the Speed Force?
The Speed Force is the source of all Super Speedster's powers. It was retroactively added during the Mark Waid run in the 1990s.
Well, that's what I was trying to.
The Speed Force is actually tied, if the old continuity holds, to the New God's source from the Genesis run.
Yeah, byproduct of the Source and the God Wave.
Yep.
And it's not one of the fundamental forces of nature. It is its own force. And I was trying to find the very first appearance of the Speed Force, but DC's wiki, the one that DC runs, a bunch of others, even Wikipedia, has nothing that says the first mention of the Speed Force was in Flash, so-and-so, whatever. So Speed Force was introduced sometime in the last 30 years. I agree. I think it was during Mark Waid's run, but I was corrected a couple of times by other people saying, oh, hey, that Waid run that you love so much actually had the other creators before Waid stepped in.
Bill Lopes.
Yeah.
I believe that the first mention of the Speed Force is actually by Max Mercury.
Yes.
It takes some place in Flash Volume 2 between the 50s and 79 with the return of Barry Allen's storyline.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And that's all Mark Waid, right?
Mark Waid comes in like issue 54 or 55 with Flash Born to Run. So, yes.
Born to Run would be it then.
I believe that Mark Waid is the first one to call it the Speed Force.
Yeah.
And to say that there's a unifying force, because that was Max Mercury's whole thing.
Yep.
Was explaining to Wally the existence of the Speed Force.
And then to Impulse, too. Talking about how to channel it and using it like a Zen Speedmaster that he was.
Johnny Quick saying, no, you're ridiculous, you're stupid, and then dying and being absorbed into the Speed Force and going, holy crap, you were right.
You're totally right, man. And Max saying, yes, I know. Run a little faster. Barry needs to save the universe. Or, sorry, Wally needs to save the universe.
Yep. 3x2, 9YZ4A.
And didn't Jesse use the same formula, too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Jesse, as both Jesse Quick and Liberty Bell, had the super speed.
Cool. Yeah, I love the concept of the Speed Force, although I think what ended up happening was it got overused.
Well, the problem with something like that is it's just like Geoff Johns introducing the emotional spectrum.
Right.
When you have a concept like that, it's hard to not use it. And when it's something that big, you know, when you're talking about 9 shades of color that represent emotions. And by the way, will is not an emotion. You have to ask yourself, how bad can this go? And the question is really bad. When you have the Speed Force, it's kind of like at the point where Marvel said, okay, what's their origin? They were born with powers. They're mutants. 1963, that was great because the implication was that the original X-Men's parents were part of the Manhattan Project.
Right.
Or were affected by nuclear bomb testing. But by 1982, it had become just a crutch. Here's a new guy. What's his deal? He's a mutant.
Well,
and
I think
the Speed Force did that.
Yeah, I was going to say it became that crutch of what story do I tell? Oh, I don't know. Barry meets some electrical being from another dimension or something, and they use the Speed Force, and Linda has to channel Barry's marker back home. And I was like, eh, come on. I think that was still Mark Waid. But that was when it, to me, got a little ridiculous. But I love the concept of the Speed Force, and it has been retroactively retconned into the origin of everybody. So even Jay Garrick with his heavy water particle experiment, it was the Speed Force instead of heavy water.
Speed Force, Savitar, Johnny Quick, Speed Demon, All of those.
Oh, the
guys,
Tornado Twins.
Yeah, all those guys who run fast. By the way, the Tornado Twins are Barry's children. Of course, they're powered by the Speed Force.
Yeah. So the big bad this week is the Pied Piper. We talked about that before. Yes. Hartley Rathaway was mentioned last week when the Rathaways were coming off the plane with their painting Fire and Ice, and they were like trying to get a phone call from their son, and they're like, "Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have a son anymore." Well, we find out why they don't have a son anymore. It's because Hartley is gay, and they disowned him, disavowed that he even existed. Interestingly, that is within the continuity of the DC Comics. Hartley was the first openly gay character in DC Comics. He did not come out as gay in the comics until he was no longer a villain. And it was probably one of the most casual outings that you could have in comics, where he and Wally are just having a conversation about villains, and he just mentions that he's gay, and they just move right on.
Yep. And it's interesting in that the Piper has always been a weird character with secrets and illusions and lies in his backstory, even back to the Silver Age. For a while, he went by the name Tom Peterson.
Right.
Because he, you know, didn't want people to know who he was. But the interesting thing in this issue, and the thing that I really like, is that Hartley Rathaway in the Flash CW TV universe is an unrepentant jerkass.
Oh, yeah, totally. And that's what happens in a lot of the flashbacks. Just Caitlin and Cisco and even Wells know that he's a dick and even come out and say it, and they all know it.
They take the first thing he does is take a shot at Cisco, and it's a pure kick the dog moment. It's here's this sweet character that we're all supposed to love and root for, and this mean guy is going to be mean to him. But the problem that I have is, he kind of had a point. Cisco is a little bit unfocused and a little bit unprofessional. So, it's difficult to make that balance. And then, of course, I loved, I laughed, and I made people rewind and watch it again. The first battle with the Flash. Hartley is going, pew, pew, I'm the Piper, pew, pew.
Yeah.
Barry runs in, shove.
Yeah.
Literally just runs up and gives him a shove, and he collapses on the ground.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how can you not realize this is too easy, Alan?
Yeah. That's what it was. And of course, the whole thing was that the Piper wanted to get revenge and kind of discredit Wells even more. So he gets captured, uses these hearing aid things, yanks him out, blows himself out of the cell. Cisco gets hurt in the process. Maybe he's going to get his vibratory powers that way. We don't know. And then he steals the files on Barry so that he can match the frequency and destroy him. Wells, of course, comes to the rescue with satellite radio, the savior of all of us.
Oh.
Pied Piper goes all the way back to Flash 106 from May of 1959. He was created by John Broom and Carmine Infantino. He was born deaf in the comics, but in the original version of the comics, his father cured him of that, and then he became obsessed with sound. Later, that was retconned into having, I think, was it Dr. Magnus repair his hearing, I think is what it was.
At one point, he's had a lot of different origins.
So Pied Piper was a villain for a long time using a sonic sounds, usually through his flute, that's Pied Piper, to hypnotize people to do things that he wants. Then after Crisis on Infinite Earths, he went straight. He no longer was a villain, decided to do good things, and became good friends with Wally West and Linda. And then it became really convoluted during Final Crisis. Was he killed? He was attached to the Trickster, and I keep wanting to say he was killed, but I'm not sure.
He was killed, and I think at one point was disemboweled and cut to pieces, and the Trickster was tied to his disembodied arm at one point.
Great.
Yeah, it was awful. Countdown is an execrable series. There's no sense to go read it.
In this episode, though, they finally do catch Hartley again and imprison him again, and Cisco is there, you know, just mocking him. And Piper basically says, hey, you don't know what Wells' secret is. And oh, by the way, I know where and how to find Ronnie Raymond, Firestorm. Yep. And we know that episode is coming. And that is going to be, I think, a point of contention going forward for Cisco to be, do I let him out to help us, or what is the catch and what's going to happen? So I like how they're not just making these villains somehow just escape naturally, but they set these bad guys up to do different things. Like when they had
Girder
Yeah, of course he died, but I mean they had a reason to let him out and do his thing.
Yeah, and I do like the fact that in this issue, this is important to me. They set up that natural antipathy between Piper and Sisko.
Right.
If we expect that Sisko's going to get the Vibe Sonic powers that he has in the comics, this issue gives him an origin because he's caught in the Sonic Blast when Piper first explained, and B, a reason to hate the Pied Piper, another Sonic guy. Mm-hmm. It gives him an origin. It gives him a villain. All they got to do is stick him in powers, put him in some parachute pants.
Yep.
We got our Vibe, man.
Yep. Also appearing in this week's episode at the very beginning, the Royal Flush Gang.
Briefly.
And I thought for a minute, and again, I thought I had seen the Royal Flush Gang in another series. And of course, this universe that we're calling it is the Arrowverse. That's what people call it because that's where it originated. But the Royal Flush Gang appeared a couple of times in the Arrow season one, I want to say.
Really?
Yes, as the bad guys there. And he defeated them. And it looks like, from what I can tell, since Star City and Central City are far apart from one another, that they are kind of using the Royal Flush Gang from, I want to say, the third iteration, the All Suits version. No, not the All Suits version. Superman 121.
Man of Steel 121. Yeah, that would be the All Suits version.
Yeah, so the Royal Flush Gang is now an organization that reaches across America with cells in every major city. Instead of five members, each cell has 52 split into four suits run by the court cards. Each member has a playing card value, and depending on what you're doing in the organization, you can rise or fall, and that's how the number changes. Now, interestingly, where those characters are introduced, Superman, let's see, what am I doing here?
The original Royal Flush Gang?
No, the original Royal Flush Gang was in Justice League of America number 43 by Gardner Fox and Mike Sikowski.
That's a good book.
Yes. Interestingly, in... Oh, I guess never mind. I was going to say, because it ties back into the Arrow universe, we are going to see these guys again really soon.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. I think that these are going to be the recurring thug criminals that Barry gets to fight again and again and again.
Well, and, you know, you got to have your team turmoil. You have to have your people who show up and get beaten quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can have them really come up and be the focus of an episode if you want. And have them be all of a sudden dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all in how you present it. And I liked that open. I liked the way it highlighted the interplay between the Star Labs team and Barry and that four-way thing that they have.
Yeah.
Which is really nice. Did you catch when Iris got her job?
Yeah, she gets a job at the Central City Picture News.
Yep, that was her Silver Age employer back in the day.
Yeah, she was a photographer for them. Yep. The first appearance, Flash Volume 1, number 109 from November of 1959.
Which is like the fourth issue of the book, by the way.
Interesting thing about this. This is where I was trying to find my news from earlier. And listeners, if you want to find kind of a show notes version of this, every week up on the majorspoilers.com website, we have an article that runs that kind of talks you through some of this stuff. But the interesting thing about Flash 109 is that is an appearance by the Mirror Master, who we haven't seen as a villain yet.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens in that issue is the Mirror Master shrinks Barry Allen down to tiny proportions. We know Ray Palmer, played by Brandon Routh, is coming soon, as is Felicity Smoke, played by Emily Rickards. They're scheduled to appear on an upcoming episode called All-Star Team-Up. Because they have to come to Star... They're coming to Star Labs so that Ray Palmer can get his shrinking suit working correctly.
Get your shrink on.
Yeah, and so... I'm thinking maybe All-Star Team-Up might be our first appearance of Mirror Master. I like going into this rabbit hole. I know some people think it's crazy thought stuff, especially when I start talking about Flash of Two Worlds. But if people were really, really cool, like there was this episode, I forget, maybe it's episode 3 or 4, where Lieutenant West or Detective West is looking at the videotape interview of Barry's father in the interrogation room. And they made a point to have the date right up there in the corner. And I said, okay, let me go look up the date. And I went and looked up the date. And that week there was a Flash episode or a Flash issue released in comic book form that featured Abracadabra, which got me down this whole line that Wells was Abracadabra. It would be very cool if Central City Picture News, first appearance of it, also features this Mirror Master story where Barry shrinks down, and then we find Mirror Master doing that in an episode where Ray Palmer and Felicity are showing up and having a team up.
Interesting.
That's just me. We also, when Iris gets to work, I mean, she's only hired because she's a blogger that has an in with the the Flash.
They think she has some sort of connection with the Flash.
And she is basically assigned a cub reporter under a guy named Mason Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as a Mason Bridge in DC Comics. There is, however, a Mason Troll Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that DC even kind of acknowledged that this is Troll Bridge. But I think the whole thing about, well, yeah, if you go up to their website, I think on Tuesday nights before Flash airs, they throw out a little things like, who is the troll under the bridge? And all these little questions. Find out tonight on. But he's
the
not
Flash.
Yeah, he's not called Mason Trollbridge. He's just Mason Bridge.
Right.
In the Flash series, I forget what his thing was. He's never been a reporter.
No, Mason Trollbridge was an older gentleman who lived near Wally West.
Yeah, lived in the same apartment building.
Right, who used to be a sidekick of the Clipper, who was a pulp-type vigilante from the 30s,
yeah,
kind of
that's,
a shadow.
That's the other thing that I didn't know. I didn't know that he was a sidekick of, that more of he was a fan of, and he later kind of took on the moniker of the Clipper himself to go and fight crime, but kind of gave it up pretty quickly when he found out that he wasn't very good at it.
Yes, he was very, very bad at it, actually. But yeah, and for a while, I want to say he had a kid who was a villain.
Two kids, yeah.
Yeah, but that was during the Messner Loeb's run when Wally had this really cool supporting cast that all up and disappeared.
Including Chunk, who we've never seen yet. Yeah, that would be cool to see Chunk show up in this series.
Lady Flash.
Yeah. He first, Mason Trollbridge first appeared Flash Volume 2, number 16, August of 1989, as a supporting character. He later used his, I guess, scientific knowledge or whatever, to help Barry defeat Abracadabra when he lost his powers. He also went on a big road trip with, I think it was Iris and Chunk when, Linda and Chunk, whenever, Barry got his powers back and sped across the desert and became Porcupine Man.
Porcupine Flash.
Yeah.
That was once again, Wally.
Yes. Sorry, Wally. Then Iris's boss at the newspaper is Eric Larkin.
Eric Larkin? He draws Savage Dragon.
Yes. There is no Eric Larkin. There's nothing that I could find of an Eric Larkin in DC Comics character names. There is a Bob Larkin, who is a Marvel artist. Mm-hmm. There is a Lance Larkin from Fun Comics number 70, who is this kind of Indiana Jones type character guy.
I think that his deal came up when Iris asked him if she could call him Chief. He is our Captain XB of my cold medicine just kicked in. You know the guy from the Daily Planet, his name is Perry, and his last name is White, but I can't remember his name.
Yeah, but there's also a Clyde Larkin, who was a Green Arrow villain known as the Polka Dot Bandit of Earth 2. I could not find any other creator or anything else that would point to a Larkin somehow in Flash history or even DC Comics. Those are the only three Larkins that I found having anything to do with comics. Now, somebody out there may be listening and going, oh, yeah, Eric Larkin. He drew panel 32 of Crisis on. Yes, that's Eric Larson, not Eric Larkin. What else? Are we missing anything from this episode? Did we kind of cover everything?
This episode wasn't heavy on the references.
No,
that came up.
That was the one thing I noticed. I was like, oh, if last week's episode was just full of it, this one's going to top it even more.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't.
There were references to the ongoing thing with Ronnie Raymond and Firestorm.
Yeah.
There were references to the possibility that Cisco, you know, is based on a character with Sonic-type powers.
Right.
There was a lot of stuff in setting up Piper as an interesting character, which I hope leads to a face turn for Piper. Because wouldn't it be great to have Piper do a full-on face turn and be a hero?
Did you, I don't know, were you bothered at all by, I mean, obviously they say that he's gay and that's why his parents disowned him.
Right.
But when Wally, or you know, when Barry first brings him in, he makes a comment like, oh, I've always wanted to be tied up by a man clad in leather. Did that seem a little out of?
No, I kind of liked that. I liked that as a reference, you know, it kind of falls under the show don't tell. In that they're telling us very obviously. But I like the fact that they were able to put that in, and it's part of the character.
Well, no,
The character is sarcastic and unpleasant, and he tries to get under people's skin, and I felt like that was an attempt to do that to Flash, to really get under Flash's skin.
I just thought that was very kind of insensitive, generic, gay stereotype.
Well, there's definitely an element of gay panic about it, but I think Wally's response to it was more of you're a jerk, not I'm uncomfortable because you're gay.
Yeah.
And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. No, I meant more from a poor writing standpoint of there would be another way to convey something like that. But who knows? Maybe he was just pushing Barry to see if he was homophobic or not.
That's one of the more memorable lines of the episode for me. So I would say that at least on the level of my comprehension, it was a successful take. So.
So overall, what did you think? How would you rate this on a scale of 1 to 5?
1 to 5, I would say 3.5.
This I was going with that too. Yeah,
solid stuff going on. A good arc. It has some ongoing stuff with Joe, and you know some things that get us into the mind of Professor Ed Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a little bit more back and build up for the firestorm stuff that's clearly going to happen. And all of the things that may be happening in the near future and whatever the big buildup is for the man in the yellow suit.
So speaking of the near future, Crazy for You is episode 12. Caitlin brings Barry out to a karaoke bar, hoping they both meet someone new. Sisko thinks about Hartley's dangerous proposition. Henry's snooping gets him into trouble. He and Eddie have decided to investigate Dr. Wells a lot more than what they have in the past. So
Henry is Barry's dad.
Yes.
Joe,
that's what I'm thinking. Yeah, so Henry's snooping out. Okay.
Henry's doing something in jail, it looks like.
And then we get to episode 13, The Nuclear Man. Dr. Harrison Wells' past catches up with him when a gorilla used for genetic experiments finds its way back to Star Labs. Now with the ability to read and control people's minds, the gorilla known as Grodd rampages through Central City. When even the Flash fails to stop him, Dr. Wells must call for help from an old friend turned enemy, General Wade Eiling.
Grodd.
Or Eiling. Is it Eiling or Eiling?
It's Eiling.
All right.
Played by Clancy Brown, the voice of Lex Luthor.
Yes. And my guess is we are 4 episodes away. I believe it's episode 15 is the team-up episode. Not the team-up episode. The time travel episode. It is episode 18, which is the all-star team-up episode with Adam and Felicity and Barry.
Grodd!
And hopefully, all-star team-up may also feature Firestorm.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
You know who I want to hear voicing Grodd?
Who?
Patrick Stewart. I want to hear Grodd have that deep tone.
Damn it, Barry! That would be just funny.
Shut up, Barry. Make it so, Professor Wells.
Let me see if I can find out who they have playing Grodd. Let's look at the entire cast and see if they've got Grodd listed yet.
I think Grodd is going to be
Gorilla Grodd.
Make or break.
Simon Burnett. Simon Burnett will be voicing Gorilla Grodd. And you know him from Stargate SG-1, The Twilight Saga New Moon, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and I, Robot.
Nice. If people can accept Grodd, I think we're over the hump for wild Silver Age Flash concepts that we should be worried about playing on TV. I mean, once you've accepted the existence of a telepathic gorilla, you can kind of take even, you know, Mirror Master into account.
Yep.
And I had read someone saying that they have now cast a weather wizard to be Weather Wizard, who's actually the brother of the Weather Wizard from episode 1.
Could be.
Rather than the Weather Wizard that we've already seen.
It's really cool if you go down the list over at IMDb. We noticed last week when the rogues made their escape that Sister Snart freed them.
Sister Snart.
The Golden Glider will appear in episode 16 of the season as the Golden Glider. So that is being played by Peyton List. So look for that.
Peyton List?
Peyton List.
Peyton List.
You know her from such things as the World Turns, The Tomorrow People,
nope.
Shuttle, and Meeting Evil.
Nope.
Well, there you go. Charlie's Angels as Zoe Sinclair from back in 2011. And Hawaii 5-0 as Erica Harris for one episode. She is also she was also Lucy Lane in the Smallville TV series.
Oh, I know Lucy Lane.
Yeah. And she also played Nicole Kirby in the TV series called Flash Forward. And I think that wraps it up for this installment of Flashback. If you have any questions, podcast at MajorSpoilers.com. Follow us on Twitter at MajorSpoilers or at Mighty King Cobra. And we will be back next time to see what happens in the world of The Flash. Take care.